Hi, and welcome to The Found Symbol. We are four actual Freemasons, and we're going to discuss all the symbols, signs, and Easter eggs in episode one, As Above, So Below, of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol. I'm John, and I'm here with Jason, Joe, and Robert, and we're going to be breaking down all this fun stuff. Fair warning, if you've not seen the episode, there will be plenty of spoilers ahead, so now's your chance to bail, but go check it out. It's an awesome show. First off, before we dive into it, like, pretty cool, huh? I think they did a really good job interpreting the book for the small screen. What do you think?
That was a fantastic first episode. So talking a little bit about casting, I have been a fan of Eddie Izzard, who plays Peter Solomon, since college. And just seeing him getting into, or seeing her, excuse me, getting into to acting, because Eddie is transgender, it's just awesome. Also a big fan of Valerie Curry, who plays... Peter Solomon's daughter. She was in a starring role in The Tick, in the Amazon Prime series that went for two seasons. So,
oh wow,
yeah, I'm very excited about the cast and what they can do. I'm just not sure if I can get over like Robert Langdon looking like BJ Novak instead of Tom Hanks. That's where I'm hung up right now.
I'm getting it. I'm soaking it in. It's working so far.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a young Robert Langdon, though. It's not like old Tom Hanks Robert Langdon, you know.
Yeah. All right. So, without further ado, let's jump right in to the breakdown of the Easter eggs we found. I'm sure there are many, many more. But we're going to take a Masonic spin on these and go right from the beginning with "As Above, So Below." Now, that's the episode title here, and guys, feel free to jump in as you'd like, but. As Above, So Below is an actual reference to a Hermetic maxim that's actually attributed to the Emerald Tablet. So you can see a picture here on the left of the supposed Emerald Tablet, which is believed to be authored by Hermes Trismegistus, as you can see on the right. So the system of Hermeticism really takes a skewed Neoplatonic view of the world and tries to ascribe that there are greater things above that also mirror the smaller things below. And so that's where the name of this episode comes from. And, you know, Freemasonry also has a lot of similar Neoplatonic ideas.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of
dualism in there. Oh, mm-hmm. Go ahead, Robert.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, you started to say it, this dualism and you know, the Hermes thrice great. I mean, in a lot of symbolic symbolry associated with it, we'll describe it as male, the female, and the male-female, also called Erebus.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you see that in a lot of alchemical art as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see the same thing in the Tree of Life. You know, not the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, but if you search for,
right,
you know,
the Tree branches of Life and the roots,
the branches and the roots mirroring each other.
Yeah. As above, so below. Awesome. Next up, right in the beginning of the episode, we have this.
So this is the Triskel or the Triskelion. This is this symbol that Moloch is sitting in the middle of is actually an ancient motif that dates back to the Neolithic era. It first appeared in Malta between 4400 and 3600 BC, and it is one of the oldest Irish symbols in existence. It was discovered in a prehistoric cave in somewhere around 3200 BC. So the Triskel features very prominently in both modern and ancient Celtic art, and it evokes a Celtic interpretation of the three realms of material existence. So earth, water, and sky, and all of their various unbroken interconnections. The symbol is also thought to represent the three worlds, the spiritual, physical, and celestial. And so, whereas as above, so below emphasized duality, here within the first minute of the episode, we see that duality coming forth into a trinity instead. And so, you know, you can see it as life, death, rebirth, creation, protection, destruction, past, present, future. There are a lot of different ways to interpret this symbol, but one big motif that this symbol has been emblematic of throughout history is reincarnation and the quest for enlightenment. And so we see this character, Moloch, searching for an ancient portal that leads to enlightenment. And so that's really what I think they're trying to portray here with him sitting in the middle of the symbol.
And it looks like we're going to see a lot more of that too, because even on some of the cover art for the series, you see that same symbol. So I don't think this will be the last time we see it. Any other thoughts? All right.
That was perfect. Nope.
Right. So as we now move on into the series, we're still only in the first, 2 minutes of the series. But we then see a cut over into Robert Langdon's class that he's teaching. And before we get into the class, we see this.
Yeah, the Ouroboros. A lot of folks might not know the official name. You know, we see it depicted in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs. You'll see it in it's referenced in. In fact, the one that you're showing on screen now, there on the right, comes from the De Lapide Philosophico. That's in 1625, an alchemical text. But the symbol itself has so much history in so many different organizations. It really tends to be used to represent cyclical nature and ever producing organism that can, like nature, it can be used as a symbol for nature, for time. And in this instance, it was kind of cool to see it just on the front of a door, going into a hall at Harvard University, where Robert Langdon is teaching a class. Something else about the Ouroboros, if just trying to remember the, that was my other note on it, was it had been adopted in the early stages of the Theosophical Society as well. So Blavatsky and some of her contemporaries came up with that symbol and used it in conjunction with the swastika and some other elements, not in a nefarious way, but in a way to show a blending of several different religions together. And so as a religious symbol, even they had adopted it, appropriated it.
I also like that, talk about the cyclical nature, the circular nature of time. I like how it's also used as a symbol of death and rebirth, right? Coming full circle, which, you know, also implies a lot of transformation, personal transformation.
Yeah, and the symbol actually, they've actually found, there you go. Yeah, Joe and I have the same ring.
all three of us do.
Yeah.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
It's not like the others.
It's a prehistoric tablet that they found in Celtic Ireland that actually depicts an Ouroboros with a lion's head. And in this instance, it's said to have meant that it was protecting the ultimate symbol, the ultimate power, or something along those lines. Pretty fascinating.
That's wild. Next up we have, let me get my screen shared over here. The Hand of Mysteries shows up very early with a severed hand inside the Capitol building.
Yes, it does. And this is Joe. I'll start talking. So, Hand of the Mysteries, definitely one of my favorite symbols of this episode. Most of you have probably seen an example of it. The example on the left is a print by J. Augustus Knapp, who made a lot of prints for Manly P. Hall's magnum opus, The Secret Teaching of All Ages. And he actually defines it in Secret Teachings. So I'm not going to besmirch his words and use his words because they're perfect. But so, and I quote from The Secret Teachings. So besides its alchemical and Kabbalistic meanings, the figure symbolizes the hand of the master mason with which he raises the martyred builder of the divine house. Philosophically, the key represents the mysteries themselves, without whose aid man cannot unlock the numerous chambers of his own being. The lantern is human knowledge, for it is a spark of the universal fire captured in a man-made vessel. It is the light of those who dwell in the inferior universe with the aid of which they seek to follow in the footsteps of truth. The sun, which may be termed the light of the world, represents the luminescence of creation. The star is the universal light which reveals cosmic and celestial verities. The crown is absolute light, unknown and unrevealed, whose power shines through all the lesser lights that are but sparks of the eternal effulgence. Thus is set forth the right hand, or the active principle, whose works are all contained within the hollow of his hand. So, I mean, he says it absolutely perfectly. These are, you know, you've got some extra symbols there, which we didn't see in the episode. There should be symbols in the palm, right? According to Augustus Knapp's print. But outside of this, which was made in the early 20th century or late 19th century, there are earlier versions of the Hand of the Mysteries or the Hand of the Philosopher. One of the earliest we see was by Bernard de Montfaucon, which was a, I believe he was a monk. And you find it in his book printed in 1719, which was Antiquitatis Explicatione et Schematibus Illustrata, which translates from Latin to antiquity illustrated by explanation and schemes, or, you know, drawings. So, yeah, you got a lot of not uber super Masonic. A lot of that symbolism you can translate to Masonic symbolism. But if you ask Manly P. Hall, he'll tell you it absolutely is Masonic. And that's okay with me. You know, symbols are
despite
meant to
the be fact,
another person.
Despite the fact that he wrote Secret Teachings of All Ages well before he became a Mason.
That's how dope he was.
It's all connected. It's all connected.
He was so woke that, yeah.
All right. Next image here. Actually is one that we don't see, but we hear discussed when Robert Langdon is kind of talking with Peter Solomon about his daughter, you know, and showing the disconnect between some of the noetic sciences and that he doesn't really believe in it, about her studies of the pineal gland. So what is the pineal gland? It's a casual reference that most people wouldn't catch. That's why we're here, because that little tiny ball that you see there is a little tiny gland that's inserted in almost the exact center of your brain. And it does have a function, but that function has been really discovered over time of what it actually does for the human body. And so on its surface, scientists have determined that its primary focus is to regulate melatonin in the body, right? The chemical that helps us kind of know when to go to sleep, right? Regulate some hormones and the like. And it had been, a lot of the mystery schools had actually predicted that it actually did more than just regulate melatonin, that it actually had some sort of third eye or psychedelic gateway or portal into the mind. And so it seems a little far out at first, but there has been research to determine what are some of the causal effects of the pineal gland. And so it was believed for many years to produce a little chemical called DMT. Rick Straussman, who's an author and clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine, had theorized for a long time that it actually produced this, but in 2013, so very recently, was able to scientifically prove it by measuring DMT output in the pineal gland of certain rodents under certain conditions. DMT, this chemical itself, tons of documentaries on that on the Netflix and the YouTubes, but you'll see that DMT is a chemical that can produce some not only hallucinogenic properties, but also, you know, kind of spiritual awakening types of of feelings, emotions, experiences. And so it's not just a chemical that you can get externally. It's a chemical that is naturally producing. It's also been theorized, but I don't know if it's been proven, that when mothers give birth, that their body kicks in a little boost of DMT to just jumpstart everything and really help to alleviate some of the pain. So that's, I don't know how true that is, but all related to this one little gland called the pineal gland.
And so if you have read Mark Booth's work, also known as Jonathan Black's Secret History of the World, he goes into kind of a prehistoric man and prehistoric beings in great detail in some of the early chapters of his book. And so he theorizes that the pineal gland was actually much enlarged and was the focal point of the brain, which then enabled an inherent innate spiritual connection with the divine that has since been broken with man's separation from God and the resultant shrinking of the pineal gland. So that's, you know, that's, wow, that's another interesting,
yep,
you know, idea.
Yeah. We used to be much more spiritual.
And we were plant people too, according to Mark Booth.
Yes.
Plant people.
Yes. He's got some interesting ideas.
Yes.
Not as cool as reptile people, but plant people.
Plant people. So speaking of DMT, let's talk about the sprig of acacia. So you can see, as Robert Langdon is now going to the sub-basement of the Capitol building, finding, of course, every cool cavern lair in every Hollywood or Batman series has some little magical switch that you pull off of a sconce on the wall that opens a door. And sure enough, here we are by the use of a key in the shape of an acacia leaf.
So my question here is, how the hell do you get a death trap into the basement of the Capitol building?
It's planned from the beginning. George Washington.
The answer is always George Washington.
Always, America, always George, right? Washington.
That's why there's 50 paintings of him in every Masonic lodge.
There were 50 paintings of him throughout the episode in, yep, Peter Solomon's office, to include like Paul Revere and Ben Franklin as well. Peter Solomon's safe, George Washington in his apron, the conference room that Langdon was in, big picture of George Washington. But we're here to talk about the sprig of acacia, which is something that is a critical element of Masonic symbolism. It is acacia is a species of many different types of plants. The interesting thing is they factor quite prominently in the Bible, but the plant itself is native to Africa and Australia and not the Middle East. So in the Bible, it has been theorized that the burning bush was actually made of acacia. And so if you link acacia to its DMT producing properties, you could make that connection there. The tabernacle was said to have been built out of acacia as well. For the Freemason, it is synonymous with the evergreen, and it represents the hope in immortality and life after death. And so a very, very prominent figure in Masonic ritual and lore.
And DMT. Plus, if you want to learn more about DMT and Freemasonry, go check out Alchemically Stoned, a good book by Brother P.D. Newman, who makes that connection.
Just search for it on TMR, because we did an episode with him about it.
Well, there you go. Yep. All right. Boom. So Robert Langdon makes his way into the sub-basement of the Capitol building and uncovers, through the use of this acacia key, a chamber of reflection.
Reflection. Try to give you an echo there. Yeah. So chamber of reflection. So you've heard us talk about this room a lot. So for those who aren't Masons and those that are new to the show, what the Chamber of Reflection is, it's a device used in some rites of Freemasonry, used in some places here in the York Rite or American Rite. in Blue Lodges and the Scottish Rite, the Écossais Rite. A lot of European lodges use it as well. It is a room for reflection where alchemy happens. You know, not the turning lead into gold type of alchemy, but that transformation from that, you know, that mundane person that you started as with a better person coming out at the end. So it's a room, and it has symbols of mortality, many of which you saw on the show. You saw the hourglass. You saw, I believe there was salt in the stone, and there was sulfur there. There was a skull and crossbones and a Bible. And then on the wall is the vitriol in another slide, or am I covering that here?
We do not have that in a slide.
Okay, cool. So on the other side, you saw them where they found the cool thing, which we'll talk about later. They found the word vitriol, or the acronym vitriol, wrote on the wall, which in Latin is Visita Interiora Terrae Rectificando in Venias Occultum Lapidum, which means visit the interior of the earth, and through rectification or purification, you'll find the hidden stone. So that's gonna get way cooler into the episode, but it's a place where alchemy happens, alchemy on a very personal level. And I think they did it quite nicely on the show.
Well, Robert Langdon starts to go through that alchemical process with reacting with the salt and pouring the water into the salt to find the hidden door.
Yep.
We're talking spiritual.
And then the Indiana Jones style death trap, like in the basement of the Capitol. Which
makes George Washington. I need to get one of those to keep my kids out of the office, you know, those death doors.
Or the Great Dane.
You're going to need to put a big rock just in case you have to get out. And
yes.
Okay, so later on in the episode, he gets handed a letter from Solomon's daughter. Supposedly super secret of that's sealed with this signet or this impression of a signet. And what is this, Robert?
That's the old Leviathan cross. It's a really cool symbol. It's been around for a very, very long time. Unfortunately, it is often associated with Satanism through the works of Anton LaVey, which happened in the 1960s. He adopted the symbol then. And prior to this, it actually had no satanic or dark force type of association. So it's just unfortunate that today people will see that and go, oh, it's satanic. And it really isn't. It's actually one of the symbols for sulfur in alchemy, which has also been used to link it to the sun. In terms of human anatomy, we see it used as something that is relevant to the human soul. So it's actually quite a positive thing. And then the issue is perhaps, you know, LaVey takes this, if you guys don't know, Anton LaVey started the Satanic Church. I should have led with that. But anyway, so LaVey possibly associates, that makes this free association with sulfur and brimstone, and then bam, Satan. And so it's really unfortunate. But it's not unlike another symbol that's very similar. There's two other symbols that are similar, right? And this is the cross of Saint Peter. Saint Peter gets crucified upside down. We also see the cross of Lorraine, which is the double cross. And so you'll see that too. But what this is like the cross of Lorraine plus an infinity symbol. And that double cross is really kind of an idea that symbolizes balance and protection. Or it could even mean the idea of the two horizontal bars as a material duality that is penetrated by this eternal spirit, is that upward bar. And then so then you have the infinity symbol at the bottom, which takes it to mean like infinitely. So it's a very positive symbol actually for the soul and protection and balance. Some say that its origin before LaVey, right? But before all these things, they'll say that it was created. It's often said that it's created by the Knights Templar, but I've not actually seen any evidence to support that. it's a cool symbol. I'll tell you that much. I use it in my signature sometimes.
Ooh,
not nefariously. Yeah. So.
And I've seen it. Yeah, I'm interested to see how this plays out on the series, because the examples I've seen, it usually gets interposed for the alchemical symbol for sulfur. Right. You'll see both of them, either or.
And it ties right into what you had just covered in the chamber of reflection, using the salt, sulfur, mercury, right? And so this is the first time we're seeing, I think, the symbol for it used in this way in this particular genre.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you notice too, Malak has that symbol tattooed on his shoulder.
Yep.
Yes.
And it's in the bowl too.
Yeah. The bottom of the bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And then he freaks out a little bit and he's like, ooh, this doesn't belong here. You know, so I'm interested to see if they flesh that out more.
How do they explain, that symbol being out of place in a Masonic context, for example, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, after digging through the bowels of the Capitol building and breaking through vitriol, Robert Langdon discovers a pyramid without a capstone with some strange symbols on it, which hopefully he will soon decipher.
Well, he did decipher, and deciphered enough to realize he was missing part of the piece. But what he's doing here is he is putting together a key to solve the Pigpen or Masonic cipher. And so the Pigpen cipher has been claimed to have been originated by the Freemasons. We do know that the Freemasons use the cipher heavily. It shows up in the Royal Arch, as well as several 19th century tracing boards. And it has been suggested that the Freemasons began using the Pigpen cipher to encrypt their rituals to keep them secret. The problem is it's a straight substitution cipher, so it doesn't take that much to crack it.
It's not very secure.
It's so not,
if you're trying to hack into the Freemasons, we don't use that anymore.
Yeah. So straight substitution cipher, signal. By the way, a substitution cipher, by the way, is where you have a symbol that equals a corresponding letter. So you can go through and start to almost play like a Sudoku type game to crack a Pigpen cipher.
Yeah, I was surprised how quickly they jumped straight to him solving it right away. I mean, it's to carry the story forward, but it's like, oh yeah, I know what this is, and he just goes straight to a pad of paper and cracks it in minutes. But yet, he does not have the entire code.
On the first try, too.
Yeah, of course.
The first key he writes out is the one that works.
There's actually, I don't know, I know a lot of guys who can pretty much read Pigpen cipher these days, which is kind of cool. Masonic nerd alert.
Yes, it's one of those guys, you.
Not me.
Yes. Especially if you're in the York Rite. Yes. Yeah.
All right, so that's all the symbols and signs and Easter eggs that we found. I'm sure there's many more. What did you find? What did you think? Throw those questions and answers into the comments. But other than that, that's all for this week's episode. If you want to see more content on the signs, symbols, and no secrets of Freemasonry, subscribe to this channel, the Masonic Report.